Hello, and you're listening to EcoJustice Radio from 90.7 KPFK Studios in Los Angeles, California. Our show is brought to you by SoCal 350 Climate Action, presenting environmental and climate stories from a social justice frame, featuring voices not necessarily heard on traditional, mainstream, or even public media outlets. My name is Jessica Aldridge, and today Carrie Kim will be talking to Reverend Adeya Sandoval, the spiritual leader for the Huaynano Band of Mission Indians, Ahachaman Nation. The Ahachaman people are the indigenous people of Orange County in Southern California and have stewarded and inhabited this region for roughly 12,000 years. Adeya is also a ceremonial leader, bear dancer, reburial rites ceremonialist, and keeper of songs she has been taught by tribal spiritual leader Kachi. She is the director of the tribal women's singing group Hummingbirds That Sing. We are glad you could all join us today for this interview. You are listening to EcoJustice Radio.
Aloha, my name is Carrie Kim, and we're here with Adeya Sandoval, spiritual leader of the Ahachaman Nation. She's been involved in prayerful advocacy and sacred activism around restoring Keshpamai, also known as San Onofre, to its pure and sacred state, before it became the site for Songs, the nuclear generating station that is currently in the process of being fully decommissioned. Welcome, Adeya. Thank you so much. We are honored to have you come on the show to share your wisdom and insights.
Thank you for having me.
We welcome you to open the space for our interview if there's some way you wish to do that.
Okay. Tuamna, here we are, your children, and we thank you for bringing us together in this way so that we can share with others the work that we've been doing. We ask you to bless us and whatever way we need this evening as we share our hearts and our dreams and our thoughts, and that and all good comes from it. Ilah.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. It's a turbulent time for many people. People are undergoing a lot of different sorts of variety of turmoil and challenges. And I'm wondering if you could first share a bit more about your role as spiritual leader for the Ahachaman Nation, the particular band that you are the spiritual leader for, and how this came to be. You know, what is expected of you in your role?
I have, I've been part of this tribal nation since I was a baby. my mother especially was very involved with the tribe in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And we had a lot of contact with our tribal people and family members. And but it really wasn't until the beginning of the 90s that I really got involved with the tribe in a more active way. Mm. I wanted to learn the spiritual ways of our people because it wasn't something readily taught. Mm-hmm. You know, would learn how to read or write or something. You know, you had to actually seek it.
Right.
And I found the teacher that I needed. And she was from the Lobo family, a very important family in our tribal nation. Mm-hmm. And just so happened in the early 90s, there was some development going on in the Mission Viejo Water District. Mm-hmm. And there were some tribal ancestral remains that were unearthed. Oh. And it was at that time that I think it was the revealing of this particular person, this ancestor, who was a very holy person, given the things that were found with her, and also that that she was part of the Bear Clan as well.
Okay.
And so we had a great ceremony, and because of having that great ceremony, we began to bring out all the different songs and dances that needed to be done for this particular ceremony. So it created a huge awakening in our tribal nation to do the old ceremonial ways. And she had been taught through her family line, through oral tradition, mm-hmm. from her father and his father before him, and and the grandmothers before him. So she was able to learn those ways, and so she began to teach those ways. And so I was just fortunate that I came along at that time to learn, you know, what it was to be part of the tribe in a spiritual and ceremonial way. So it was the most fantastic thing that I think could have ever happened to me. And I became a student that didn't go away. I was constantly asking questions, constantly wanting to learn. And because she saw this in me, she said, well, then I will teach you. And so I studied for 25 years with her, learning a lot of the ways of the people, learning the songs, learning the stories and language and things that needed, you know, that I needed to learn.
Well, were they sort of grooming you to be the spiritual leader, or did that sort of happen?
I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know it at the time, but that's what she was doing. And it wasn't until maybe a year before she passed away that she began to tell me that, you know, that she was giving me more and more responsibility because she was ill physically, so she wasn't able to get out and do. So she gave me a lot of the responsibility to set up the ceremonies and prepare the ceremonies and actually do the ceremonies, whereas that she was the one that would do that before. So I had learned, you know, all the basic things that needed to be done.
And so since
they were essential to have the ceremony and what it was, you know, what is a ceremony as compared to just a gathering of people or just a time to share things? You know, there's actual things that have to occur to have a ceremony. A word that's used very frivolously, I feel, in the Native communities that I've learned, I've watched and paid attention, that people use ceremony, that word ceremony, for anything. And actually, and how I've been taught is that ceremony is a specific thing designed for a specific time and to produce a certain result. And so, therefore, ceremony isn't as...
It's diluted.
It's not that it's rare. It's just that it's less frequent than people would think.
Right.
But gathering to pray and doing that can happen any time, and it's beautiful, you know. And that's what we've been doing at San Onofre, at Kadesh Pamaya. We've been gathering and praying. When she passed away, going on 4 years ago now, in May it will be 4 years, it was at that time that I assumed that role with her blessing to continue the spiritual work of the people.
And you must have seen that time
coming. And so, you know, it's a big responsibility, but it's also a gift that I've been given. And sometimes it's hard. Mostly recently, it's just been visiting the sick, you know, of the tribe and being with them and listening to them, talking with them on the phone, you know, because it's, you know, it's the way of the people, you know, to really have this is a very significant time for people when they're getting close to passing.
Absolutely.
And so I've been doing that a lot lately. And then also, I'm also different in a lot of ways than my teacher before me, because I also reach out to the community around us, you know, the people that live here too among us, you know, here in our tribal homeland of Orange County, because what my teacher told me was that we all need to work together. We have to be She goes, we are people, and we've been given this responsibility to care for the land, to be the caretakers of this land. However, she goes, we're not alone here. And others have come, and they've become part of our community, and so they need to learn, you know, how to do things too. And also we need, you know, to work together. Because they might have gifts that we don't have, or they might have the abilities that we don't have. And so that's why it's been so wonderful working with you, Carrie, and working with the other people in the San Onofre situation, because we have all come together for a common goal, and we're working together, and it's just been a blessing. It's been a blessing to me.
It's certainly been
a blessing to the land here. And it also has made us realize that if by working together, we can make things happen. You know, we can create beautiful things happening. And good things happening. So I feel really, I'm happy about that. You know, I feel like I've found brothers and sisters that may not be calling themselves a Hashemite, but they are my brothers and sisters. And it's been really good for me have that experience.
As long as I've known you, ever since I first met you, well, and one thing I want to say first is that among human beings everywhere right now, one of the greatest issues is galvanizing people in the same direction. And as long as I've known you, you have always advocated for unity above all else. And same with Chairwoman Teresa Romero when we were working on Hushman Wisdom Day around San Onofre. Yeah. Unity was the paramount message. And can you speak about why it's essential now, this common goal of unity?
Well, ultimately, there's a very deep spiritual teaching in the word unity, because it implies oneness. And everyone in every spiritual realm of field or work that I've been paying attention to, we're all talking about that. What does that mean, that oneness? It means that really there is no separation between us, that we are all really one thought. We are one word. We are one emotion. You know, it's because we all bring this together and create that oneness. And by doing that, we have more strength. I have a term I use, Sapulna Chamilutiwan, in our language. It means in our oneness, we are strengthened.
Mm-hmm.
And that unity that, you know, that Chairman Romero was talking about, the unity that I talk about, the unity that you talk about, that is what we're talking about. This is, language sometimes is limited.
Yeah.
Because we create words, and then, you know, there's the beginning of the word and there's the end of the word. But what does that mean? It's hard.
Yeah.
But when we experience it, that's different, you know.
Well, and also,
we have
language is so different.
Sometimes limits us in expressing what we're trying to say.
Especially English. English is a much more dualistic language, you know. But, you know, I wanted to ask you, Keshpa Mai is the original ancestral territory of your people, where they resided and stored the lands and waters for roughly 10, 12,000 years. And
yes.
What would you most like to say to listeners about this region, which for listeners, it is also known as San Onofre, but not only San Onofre? What would you say to listeners who are paying attention to this issue and how they can best help preserve the lands, waters, flora, and fauna of this incredible place? I mean, it's a magical, immaculate place in many ways. I mean, even though there's also this nuclear waste issue, but what...
Well, I think to be... you know, we need, there is, you know, there was a woundedness that has occurred in that land. You know, one, we know it's this San Onofre nuclear generating station, which was unfortunate that it was ever placed there.
Mm-hmm.
But it is there, and that's a reality that we need to deal with. But, you know, and other things that have happened in the, you know, in the area too. But this is just an, see, how can I express it? What this does is give us the ability to see how powerful we are. You know, sometimes you have to take the most negative things, and what happens, you turn it around to make it the most positive thing in a lot of ways, in the sense of we have the ability to be stronger than that place and what's there, what they've created, what human beings have created there, that at one point may have been a good idea or a solution to something.
Right.
And then that solution turned out to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, you know, then another solution was created, and then another problem was created. It's kind of like that
spiral.
That whole crazy circle of problem, solution.
Mm-hmm.
But if we go in from to the spiritual angle of it, it's a problem that gives us the opportunity to be powerful, in the sense of how do we turn that around in a whole other paradigm and in a whole other way of being, you know. And that's why sacred activism comes into play, because we can do something about it by prayer, through prayer, through clear intention, by bringing that oneness that we all have and intending something. And it's like, we've been given this opportunity to do this, and I see it as very possible, and I feel it when we gather there, you know, that clear intention is strong, and it's very vibrant and alive.
Well, and also then, how we feel, right? I mean, how we feel versus if you start talking about nuclear waste and this burial of the nuclear waste, and you start spiraling downward energetically.
If you are just tuning in, you are listening to EcoJustice Radio, coming to you from the KPFK studios in Los Angeles.
Yes, and I think it's important to get yourself educated.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and there are people that you know, amongst that have done that. We've all found out the facts.
Yes.
The details, you know. And I think sometimes what happens when we find out, you know, these things, it becomes overwhelming. How can we turn this around? And it's difficult. And we've found different means of turning things around, but it seems like almost impossible. And I have found that some of the people that do this work to turn things around, they get very, it's very hard on them physically and emotionally and spiritually. Yeah. I see that in their faces.
Mm-hmm.
I've even felt that way at times,
sure.
You know, where I just feel like I could just fall on the ground and collapse because of exhaustion from trying to make something happen that
mm-hmm.
I feel so small and so little, like how can I make a difference in it? And that's why I think the spiritual activism part of this part that we've, this, that's not really what I want to say, but that what we want, what we've created here is way more powerful. It gives us the energy and the enthusiasm to continue on. But there is actually things occurring. There is something occurring in that. It's not like this empty thing that's mm-hmm. being done. It's, you know, and as time goes on, I see it as literally eliminating that whole problem. And it may not happen in our lifetime, you know. That's the thing, but it will happen, and I do know that.
Well, you've spoken about the unseen realms and said even that the solution to the nuclear issue, the nuclear waste issue there around Kashpamai is already being solved, even if we can't see it, and as you said, even if it doesn't happen in our lifetimes. But, you know, how do you reconcile what you know as a spiritual leader, because you are in contact with those realms, compared to, say, a regular layperson who may not at all have any belief in anything beyond what they see with their human eyes? Anything beyond the material world does not exist for them. They might not believe in prayer or ancestors or anything beyond, like, ordinary, like, human labor. So
and there are people that are like that. I, you know, what can I say? It's not that I have pity for them. but you just go, it's okay, because, you know, that's where they're at in their evolution, you know, and that's okay, because the beauty of this particular kind of work that we're doing is that we do not need every single buddy to join in. Because one person can represent millions.
Mm-hmm. I think that's one thing. Number one, to feel so small, because all some people see is their own, like, small human self.
Yes, yes.
Whether it's against corporate power or whatever things that they feel that they are up against, you know. So, when we speak about it, I feel the vision of we could spin around in a circle, or we could mm-hmm. put a little break in that circle and spiral in the way that we invoke.
We are not just operating in one little realm, this mm-hmm. little thin band of reality, you know, but there's actually something very much bigger going on than all of us.
Yes.
And it's once you begin to have that experience of it, because we could talk about it all day. It's really hard to talk about something that really is not about talking about. It's about experiencing it.
Directly.
About really, and just, you know, it's once you have a glimpse of that, then you know that it is. And that to create that, and it can be done, you know, at times, sometimes very easily, and other times it just, it happens by accident. I can't really even explain it, but it happens. And sometimes people work really hard at achieving that, and they're frustrated because no matter how hard they work, they still can't get it. And then all of a sudden they'll turn their head one way and they go, oh, there it is.
And
you didn't have to try.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really kind of humorous, but
sometimes it happens.
It's kind of like the fun of it. But
sometimes it happens easier when we don't try.
Exactly.
So hard.
Yeah. Cause trying doesn't work. Yeah.
You know,
but I think it happens just in that moment. And I've experienced it many times when we've gone out to the beach mm-hmm. there in San Onofre with you all.
Mm-hmm.
I have that experience. It's like, I think every single time I walk out there with you all, I feel that I have had that experience. I know when I'm walking back up the hill and going mm-hmm. back out to the car, you know, where we park and stuff, I go with a whole sense of just in this beautiful feeling of oneness and joy.
Well,
because it happened.
We always feel uplifted after. I think a lot of the times, and this is true for anything where we love something and want to preserve something and we want to be in sacred reciprocity, that sometimes just arriving is the most important thing. You know, just showing up and showing up and showing up. And, you know, regarding activism and the many environmental and social justice movements going on right now, you know, some people will feel that they failed. if they don't achieve the result that they seek. You know, cultural activist and author whom you've seen him speak, Stephen Jenkinson, he makes a comment that elders are forged by their failures and by endings, not by a string of success. And I'm wondering what you would like to say to encourage people out there and offer some perspective when they have feelings of failure or feeling that they're not achieving what they wish in their efforts to help humanity or human earth, and they're up against that wall place. What would you like to say?
Yeah, and that happens very often. I think I mentioned this on a call one day, and there's only one being that needs to hear your desire of the heart, you know, in these environmental issues that we have, and that's the Earth herself. She hears us. You know, it's not the corporations. It's not the, though we want them to hear our words, you know, and to make some kind of, you know, impact so that they go, oh, my gosh, we've made this mistake all this time. We're so sorry. We're going to change our ways. You know, that would be so nice to have that result. But it's the Earth that hears. Mm-hmm. She hears and she feels the love and the longing of correction and wanting things to go back into the natural state that it needs to be in order for life to go on this planet. She knows it. She hears it. So all that effort, all that work, all those pages of writing and radio station comments and
petitions and,
placards drawn and, you know, all of that is not unheard. She hears it. She sees it and she feels it. And I said, and she's the one that we're doing it for. Mm-hmm. And so she should be the only one that we should be concerned about in that regard.
Well, that changes.
And then it's not futile anymore because then she, you know, it's like there's a response. There's always a response her by our true expression of care and love. And there's always a response. And she's always, because we have to see that she's a living and vibrant being. She's not this, you know, what people have tried to make her, you know, covering her with cement and asphalt and all of that and putting things that could be harmful. Mm-hmm. She's not. She's a living and vibrant being that has feelings, and she can feel us. She can hear us, and she can touch us at any moment, even when there's 6 feet of cement underneath our feet. I have had these. The reason why I say it, because I've had these experiences with her, and I know that. Mm-hmm. And so I always say, don't be frustrated, because she knows your heart. If it is really the true heart that you have, she knows it. And so just by that, she responds in a positive way. She responds to that.
Absolutely. Well, we've had that experience so many times. We've had so many magical experiences out at Keshpamai, you know. And I think people also just need to be able to tune in and feel and be observant and see, like you were saying, these responses instead of being in the head to try to make something happen and have goals only strictly that stay in our head. So, you know, you know, would you like to say something briefly about the upcoming event at Panhe?
Well, every year we have this event at our village site of Panhe, which is on Camp Pendleton, which is actually on the San Mateo campground off Cristianitos Road, as you in the southern part of Orange County. And every year we have this event to honor the spring, but also to bring awareness to the general public about the work that we've been doing and, you know, preserving our sacred sites. Panhe is a very important village of our people, and it is a very large village. So we're fortunate to be able to gather there. We have burial sites there. We've done great ceremony on that land there, too, honor our ancestors. So it's a very significant place for us. So we gather there, but we also invite the public to come and to learn about different environmental things that are going on.
And that's happening.
To share songs, to share stories, dances, and things like that from other groups that come and are part of the day as well. So
and that's next
on Sunday, March the 24th.
Sunday, March 24th. And it's all day.
At 10 o'clock and goes till 4, I think. It's not a long, long day, but it's a perfect day, and it's hopefully it will be a beautiful day, even if it rains. We always look forward to that. It's kind of like honoring the springtime as well, because it is the beginning of the spring, early part of the spring. And the season of the spring is such a
a beautiful time, and because of all the rain we've had, the flowers are already blooming. This morning I went out and saw there were three California poppies opened up on my on the front yard, and it was, they're coming, they're blooming already, and I hear even the swallows, the little swallows that swoop and twitter out on the outside. They're here already. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, all the signs of spring are coming, are here already, and so it's a time to celebrate that beautiful, you know, all of the work that we've done, the prayers and the meditations and the going into the cave of the bear, so to speak, you know, to hibernate into lay low, you know, all of that will come forth in the beauty of the spring, and all that praying and, you know, laying low will, so... It's a joyous time to share those things that we're working on, our ideas, our those new creative ways we're going to be in the spring, you know, bring forth joyful things, just like the flowers are blooming, and you know, so it's a beautiful time. The hills are so green right now already, just vibrant green.
Well, it's great to remind all of our listeners to also just spend more time with Mother Nature and remember. And make those connections, not just even in being an activist all the time, but actually literally spending time connecting with Mother Nature physically.
Yeah, because as humans, we tend to get real cerebral in what we do. And and I admire that. I think that's good. We need to have good thinking, you know, hard, solid thinking. But
there's a balance.
If we stay too much in our head and we don't let, you know, that those emotions come through, it can be really, it's not good for us. So the springtime is a good time to bring that beauty out of ourselves, you know, and just feel things and experience things rather than just think about things.
And rebirth ourselves after winter. I wanted to mention a couple events. Adelia, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. We're very grateful for you and out at the prayer circles for Keshpamay, and also just everything that you model for us and the way that you are and the ways you teach us to remember Mother Earth, like you were saying, to hear her and know that she's responding to our highest intentions. It's an important time to protect this area of Keshpamay. So thank you again, Adelia. We're so grateful to have you on the show, and we will keep coming there and going out there with you to bless the land and continue the prayers moving forward.
I look forward to it too.
Thank you to our listeners for joining us. This is EcoJustice Radio coming to you from the KPFK studios in Los Angeles. I want to thank Reverend Adelia Sandoval for coming onto the show and our host, Carrie Kim. You've been listening to EcoJustice Radio, brought to you by SoCal 350 and 90.7 KPFK. The show can be found on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, and at SoCal350.org. Created by Mark and JP Morris, executive producer Jack Eye, engineer Blake Lampkin, interview hosted by Jessica Aldridge of Adventures in Waste, and original music by Javier Cadre. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.